You're listening to a Radio 191 FM podcast.
Gather round, loyal listeners. It's the Brooking Report on Radio 191 FM.
Good morning to you, Rachel. How are we?
Good, thank you. And it is a beautiful autumnal day here today.
It is. Is autumn your favourite season?
No.
No, what is your favourite season?
I think it's spring.
Mm.
Or summer, even. I like longer days.
Yeah, fair enough. You're not one for the winter, cold, dark days of Dunedin?
No, I do like the cold, still days of Dunedin in winter. Those are beautiful.
Very pensive days.
They are pensive, yes.
Great word. I love that word.
It is a good word.
Yeah. I do love autumn for being a time of change, you know? It's the opposite of spring. It's a time of almost like death, and then spring is like the time of life.
Yes.
And the two are so interconnected.
They are, and Dunedin is a great place for having the four seasons, often in one day.
Often in one day. Maybe even five seasons in one day.
Yeah, sometimes back and forth.
Yeah, totally. I saw on Instagram that you attended the City Planners Fringe Art Exhibit that happened, in March. And I want to know, what was your clay creation and what was your wish for the hospital?
It was very embarrassing. I did a terrible, very basic human that ended up sort of looking like a monster.
Oh, right.
Or like the Scream. You know, the person in the painting, the Scream?
Oh, by Van Gogh.
Yeah. No, it's not Van Gogh. It's a Norwegian artist whose name I cannot remember. And I'm not even going to try because I get it wrong. And I wished for the hospital being built as promised.
True. This was my creation. It's it's probably a bit more rudimentary. It's a little guy, and there's like a boat in the background.
And he's got like a head and arms and legs. Listeners can't see this creation, but it is a thing of beauty and much more sophisticated than my little thumb monster screen person.
We had, I think it was Marion from the City Planners, come through for a chat and talked about that. But what was your wish for the hospital, sorry?
It was what we've been chanting for ages, which was the, you know, build it once, build it now.
Build it right. Yeah. Kapai. Let's talk planning, because that is sort of your forte. You were recently in Parliament taking the government to task over new legislation which would reduce the minimum housing capacity for Auckland's council's Plan Change 120, PC 120. It's a gigantic housing planning framework. The Minister for RMA, Chris Bishop, unveiled that they reduced the minimum housing capacity to 1.4 million homes, down from 1.6, a number that was originally 2 million, so it's already down heaps. Then when the regulatory impact statement came out, it read 1.6 million houses again. So why do these numbers keep changing between 1.4 million to 1.6?
That is a very good question, Zach. So this issue of housing intensification in Auckland's been going on for about a decade or so, and most political parties agree that it would be good to have more housing supply, more capacity, so that we can have people affording to live in the city.
Yes, right? And not have urban sprawl.
And not every political party agrees with that, but that's something that Labor's careful about, the urban sprawl, and really wants to incentivise the intensification of the city, because, you know, Auckland is our international city and it has done some intensification, but it needs to do some more, particularly around the areas quite close to the CBD. So those walkable suburbs that are, or suburbs that, you know, you just need to catch a bus and you can get into the CBD. And the unitary plan didn't require or didn't really allow for intensification of some of those areas. So then there was a bipartisan agreement between National and Labor. So this was last term of government when Labor was in government and I was on the select committee. And that was for MDRS, which is a medium density residential standard, which was three houses per site permitted of three stories high. And so this went into the plan, and that would have enabled about 2 million housing capacity. So that this is capacity. It's not what will be built, it's just capacity. Right. So the plan is allowing for that much capacity.
And what's the capacity at the moment?
Well, the unitary plan has about 1.2 million capacity. Mm-hmm. So then National said they reneged on that bipartisanship, and they said they campaigned against that MDRS, the 3x3. But they said, don't worry about it, because we're going to have a new plan that still does that minimum 2 million capacity. So don't worry. And so we said, okay, well, you work with council and we'll get out of your way. And we had then a piece of resource management legislation that went through the House last year that was amended at the last minute in the process by the government. And but that has the 2 million. It doesn't say 2 million, but it works out to be 2 million. So they passed that in August 2025. This government, this minister, this cabinet. And then there must have been some barbecues over the summer. And so we heard at the end of the summer, the Prime Minister said, oh, no, we're going to change it.
Yeah, it was a big top dog decision, wasn't it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And ACT has often been opposed to it anyway. Mm-hmm. So David Seymour, he's the Member of Parliament for Epsom, which is one of these areas that's close to the CBD. So they said, oh, it's going to be 1.6. And so about 6 weeks before this change that we've just had, Chris Bishop made a big speech and he's talked about this 1.6 number. And we, again, was like, okay, well, if you've worked it all through, sort of roll your eyes, but get on with it. You're costing ratepayers in Auckland a whole lot of money here with all this towing and froing.
Yeah.
And so the regulatory impact statement that you just referred to, which is the thing where the policy analysts do the pros and cons of policy options, that was all based on 1.6. Then on Tuesday, the week before Easter, or the week of Easter, we got this urgent legislation that went through all stages urgency, so no submission process, no chance for us to go through it in a great level of detail or anything. And it had this 1.4 number in it, which is only not that far off what the original plan is at 1.2. But also, there's other documents. There's a national policy statement on urban development that apparently means that the capacity's got to be 1.6 anyway. So it's just this big waste of everybody's time and energy and money and is hopeless.
So the final number will be 1.6?
Well, maybe. and then it is a minimum. And we did get, Chris Bishop did answer questions in the committee stage of the House. So we did ask him about this. And the ministers said, no, it is a minimum. So if Auckland Council wants to do more, they can. And Auckland Council had been working away for 6 weeks hard out on this 1.6 number. And they'd come up with 10 principles that they want to work to, which is very much about intensification and not sprawl and using the 10K perimeter from the CBD as an area, as well as all the big train stations and stuff. Everybody agrees, you know, around the train stations where there's been huge amounts of investment, of course they should be intensified. That makes total sense. Everybody also agrees you shouldn't intensify in floodplains or areas that are subject to hazards. So, you know, people, we need to do some planning. Mm-hmm. The planners need to do the planning for this to take into account those different circumstances. And Auckland Council might just get on with it.
It's funny you say that because Tamaki Mayor Wayne Brown has been pretty defiant and feisty towards the government, who he sees as Wellington elites who are disconnected with the housing needs of Auckland. I think he was talking about the numbers that we were talking about just then, and he said they're as relevant as the number of clouds going by in the sky. Can he ignore this legislation limiting his vision for a more intensified Tamaki?
Well, it is a minimum, so yes. And all this urgency was for nothing.
Really?
If he wants
just posturing.
But it's going to be hard because he is just one vote around that table, that council table. So there are other councillors on the table. So Christine Fletcher is one of them who definitely want to not go, to stay with the minimum, to not go beyond the minimum. The mayor might want to go beyond the minimum and other members of council might, but he'll need to get the votes on that. And he says, oh, it's all Wellington-led and bureaucrats, but it's actually Auckland MPs like Simeon Brown, like David Seymour, like Christopher Luxon, who are the ones who want that number reduced, and they are the members of parliament for some of the areas that some people don't want to be intensified.
I think his larger point, he said, I think, what, five of the 10 people in cabinet don't live in Tamaki Makaurau or something. He said some number like that.
It was a huge amount of cabinet ministers live in Epsom alone.
Yeah, true.
And ask how many live in the South Island.
Very true. Very, very, very true. If Labour gets into power, I mean, how are you going to tackle that? Because he's a bit of a political,
nightmare. Well, I mean, so you go to first principles, right? So we do want intensification in the city, and we do want it in the sensible places around the where the infrastructure is, not in the hazard areas. And we do want there to be community input into it as well. So with all of the RM things, and we've talked resource management things, and we've talked about this before, we'll see where where everything's at by the time there's an election, and if we're lucky enough to be in government, if things are working well, we're not going to go and upset the apple basket just for the sake of it, like this government seems to do.
Yeah, yeah, that seems to be their number one hobby, isn't it? In the Instagram caption, which was for the video of you in Parliament talking about these changing numbers around Auckland's housing capacity, you said that fewer houses will be built, rents will rise. No wonder young people are flocking to Australia. Surely it's time for Labor to consider a rental warrant fitness scheme or a rent freeze or rent cap if things are as tough as they are. Surely those are some policies you're toying with.
Well, we're toying with a lot of the policies that we had last time, which include Kāinga Ora actually building, and they've stopped. So we've got a really great two examples of that in Dunedin. On Carroll Street, there was going to be 41 units built. It was all consented. This has nothing to do with Resource Management Act. Consented, the previous houses there were demolished, ready to go. Chris Bishop and this government has stopped that. Then again, consented, ready to go at Port Chalmers in a historic sort of state housing area, that land is now up for sale.
Is it still up for sale?
Last time I checked, it was up for sale. It keeps coming back on the market. They'll have a date. So excuse me if I've got that wrong, but I haven't heard that it's been sold yet. And they'll be selling when the market's flat, right? So they won't be getting a very good price for it. Yeah. And then when Labor comes along again and tries to build more houses, no doubt the market will be up, so it just costs everyone a whole lot more and is stupid. So that's one thing, the Kāinga Ora and the having the houses. Another thing is a structural change to the economy with a capital gains tax. So we have this problem at the moment where everybody, like me, not a boomer though, very much Generation X to say, but if we've got some spare money, then we're incentivised to go and buy another house, and we don't really get taxed for that particularly if we make a capital gain on it. Whereas somebody closer to your age then comes into the market and all the prices are inflated. And we've had that problem for ages. So we are campaigning on that capital gains tax to try and improve that structural problem in our property market.
If I can interrupt though, that's proposed to bring in, what, $700 million per year?
And it's ring fence then for healthcare. But the point of that is the structural economic change in the property market to enable younger people to get into it. Like that's the reason for the policy, not the making some money from it. But then another thing we did, of course, is the Healthy Home Standard, and that's only been in place since 1 July last year, 2025. And so the questions about whether a warrant of fitness is needed or not, I think we still need to look at what's happening with that standard that's only been in place for under a year, and how the compliance and monitoring is working or not working.
That's fair. I'm sure you've heard, though, from a lot of students in Dunedin that their houses are exempt from the Healthy Home Standards for heritage status. So surely that's where something like a rental warrant of fitness can come in and sort of improve the housing stock that is exempt.
Or you change the exemptions.
You could, but that's not exempt. You could.
Because I actually haven't had that come to my office.
Really?
Yeah, no, and that's really interesting. And I talk with OUSA now. I have a meeting with Zoe as well.
Really?
Yeah.
Never heard that before. True.
No. Most of the problems I've heard are about some horrific landlords with really disgusting houses.
Okay. Because the, you know, some heritage homes, you can't put in certain kinds of insulation, whether that's underfloor or roof insulation.
Because it's not a reasonable test? Because in the legislation, you've got to insulate in and do some barrier controls if reasonably practical. There's some catchphrase like that.
Because some places, like, you just can't get under the floor because the house is so old. It was designed that way.
Yeah, so it's not a heritage issue. It's a practicality issue getting underneath the house.
But most of the houses that would have that issue would be older homes. And that's when the heritage claim comes into the fore.
Yeah, no, I'll look into that because that's not been raised with me before.
Oh, well, I'm glad to raise it with you. We don't have a whole lot of time left. I did want to get into Iran, but I think that's a bit too broad at the moment. I do have a very, very, very specific question out of curiosity. You hold the Labor portfolio for space. Is that portfolio as bipartisan as the portfolio for foreign affairs and trade? Because, you know, space is a pretty long-term economic, commercial research investment for Aotearoa New Zealand. Do you talk a lot with your counterpart?
No. No, I haven't spoken a lot with my counterpart who's been Judith Collins, and she's just leaving that, and so Chris Pink is going to pick up the space portfolio. It is bipartisan in some ways in terms of, you know, the good jobs for New Zealanders. That's important. And then where it differs in the Greens in particular are concerned about this, where satellites might be used for issues that relate to defence, and a lot of them do relate to defence. And so there is... And the national government has kept this, which is good. There is a national interest test that is required by the minister to sign off before anything is launched from New Zealand. Every single launch needs to sign off. So I've been asking the minister for what the criteria are that she considers, and I have not got anything back on that, which is a real frustration.
It is. I hope you can get some more clarification around that. Thank you so much for coming through and having a chat with me. Hopefully we can have a chat in May as well. I know you're...
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcast.